This is the beginning of class 6.
Sanshi Bhagi Jushin Neto Shang Vira Vinci Nyende Yampadi Sangye Shindu Mithe Uwagi Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Badu Dagni Kapsuchi Dagi Chunyen Dupe Sunangki Drola Penche Sangye Chupasho Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Vadu Dami Kapsuchi Dagi Chumyen Gimpe Sunangi Drola Penche Sangye Jupasho Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Vadu Dami Suci dahi cemen kita senangi jola kenci sange juhasu.
Question about last class, and we talked about why a changing, omnipotent being couldn't create the universe.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I understood it. Is it because all changing things have to be caused, and because he was caused, he would have to evolve into this omnipotent being?
Yeah, nobody... Different people asked me... I mean, that question wasn't very clear. And we went over a couple of reasons why... A couple of problems with the idea of an omnipotent... Omniscient, omnipotent being. And the main one is that he could not have created his own mind.
And it had to be caused?
He could, yeah, because it has to be caused. So he could not have been a person who's... There's just a problem with a person who's omniscient creating the world, because he would have had to create his omniscience also. Because his omniscience is part of the world.
You can't just say it's always existed.
Excuse me?
You can't just say it's always existed infinitely.
That's another problem. I mean, but he would have... His omniscience is part of the world.
You can't just say it's always existed.
Excuse me?
You can't just say it's always existed infinitely.
That's another problem. I mean, but he would have... If he's the creator of the world, and if he knows everything, knowing everything is one of the things he would have had to create. If he created all things, he would have had to create his own omniscience, which is a problem.
Is that treated... Further on in the text, because
it wasn't very clear. It was in the reading, but you have to get it out of the reading. But basically, that he would have had to create his own omniscience, and that's him. And he would have had to be omniscient before that, because the creator would have had to be omniscient. So that's a problem. It's like saying, they say it's like a man riding on his own shoulder, or a knife cutting itself, and you've got to just think about it. Okay. I mean, there's a problem with an omniscient being creating the world, because he had his omniscience. He's part of the world also, and his omniscience is part of the world, and he would have had to create his own mind. And to create his own mind, he would have had to be omniscient, but he wasn't omniscient yet, because he didn't create himself yet. He didn't create his omniscience yet. If you say the creator has to be omniscient, then who made the omniscience?
Well, because by definition, at least in this context, omniscience is caused.
Yeah, it must be caused. It's a state of mind. So it's just...
But if you define it,
so obviously crazy that you know, you miss it because you grew up in this culture and you think it makes sense. Anyway, he would have had to have made his own mind, because his own mind is one of the things in the world.
Couldn't the same line of reasoning be applied to the concept of the Buddhist concept of the mind stream there? It's always existed, you know, had to be caused.
Could you say that about an omniscient being?
Say again?
Like the mind.
The mind is, we say it's beginningless. We say it didn't have a creator.
You could theoretically say the omniscient being.
You could say what?
I mean, the omniscient being was beginningless, if you define omniscience to
be. Yeah, sure. Then who made the world? The world is beginningless?
I kept running up against this issue of unchanging objects, and I realized I wasn't clear about unchanging objects and whether they were, you know, what's in terms of dependence, independent arising.
We studied in the three principal paths that dependence has a lot of meanings, and we learned that the lowest meaning of dependence, which is that everything has a cause, is insufficient because it doesn't cover changing things.
Unchanging things.
So, by the way, I'm very buzzed out. I was on a plane all night last night. Mm. The lowest interpretation of what interdependence means is not accepted by the higher schools because it doesn't cover unchanging things. The lowest interpretation of dependence is that all things depend on their causes, and because it doesn't cover unchanging things. The lowest interpretation of dependence is that all things depend on their causes, and the higher schools say that's not sufficient because it doesn't cover unchanging things.
Did this school fall right in the middle?
Yeah, they kind of fall in the middle. But we didn't talk about what they believe.
Unchanging things have parts, so...
Yeah.
Unchanging things have what?
Parts.
So they're dependent. But that's we didn't cover that, and that's not part of this.
Well, it's in the text, or it's referred to constantly.
Yeah. Of interdependence?
Well, in the text that we just read, they talk about dependence. Things being dependent.
Oh, depending. But
and
that, that's not...
Rising and depending.
Yeah, that's not dependent originally. It's not. We didn't talk about their idea. Mm. They do describe depending on those things, but that's not. We're
going
to talk about it now, actually. But we got to move tonight, or else you'd be here very late. I promise you. So it's a long one tonight. Say Lungjung.
Lungjung.
And Lungdo.
Lungdo.
Lungjung.
Lungjung.
Lungdo.
Lungdo.
Okay. Lungjung means forward order of something. And Lungdong means the reverse order of something. And I'll give you the classic example. The classic example is not in your homework, it's not in your reading. I'm just giving you an example of what these two words mean. You know the Wheel of Life. And it has those 12 links. The 12 links that where suffering comes from, where this world comes from, where samsara comes from. What's the first link? Kylie had a couple of years of this. Dhammo Maripa. What's the first link?
Ignorance.
Yeah, ignorance. The two blind men, right? And if you have ignorance, what does it make you do? If you're at work, and you have ignorance about the guy who attacks you, what will you do?
Attacking back.
Yeah, you'll attack him back. And that's the second link, which is karma.
Nipa
duje gile. What's a sumba?
Is it the heaps?
Then you start all the causes of birth and things like that. You start into the different heaps that are caused by birth. But that's forward progression. That's like what causes. When you get up to number 8, 9, 10, 11, what are those? Do you remember? Gupa Lemba, Chupa Sipa, Chuchipa Kiowa. When you get up to the last four links, for example, these are just examples of forward progression. When you get up into Gupa Lemba, at the moment of death, you grasp to something. Chupa Sipa means you create, your karma ripens because of your grasping. This is all at the moment of death. And then Chuchipa, the 11th link, is birth. And then the 12th link is aging and death. So those are Lungjung. those are, that's how the wheel gets, you know, Wheel of Fortune gets spun. And that means forward order. Okay, what triggers what? Ding, 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 ding. You know. So what do you think reverse order is?
What was the cause? What was the cause?
Excuse me?
Starting there and going back.
Yeah, it's what like you start with death. And you say, if I want to shut off death, what do I have to shut off? Mm. Birth. If I want to shut off birth, what do I have to shut off? Ripe karma at death. If I want to shut off that, what do I have to shut off? I have to shut off the grasping that triggers that ripe karma. And then you go backwards. If I want to cut off the second link, which is fresh karma, created karma, what do I have to shut off?
Ignorance.
The first one, which is ignorance. That's lungdo. That's reverse order. So that just gives you an idea of forward order and reverse order. What we're doing it, what is the use of lungdo, lungjung and lungdo in this chapter of the Pramanavartika is semargyopa. What is semargyopa?
That's totally correct. Being.
Yeah, becoming.
Michael?
Yeah.
It's kind of dotty up there, and it's difficult to tell where your sex are. Is it?
Excuse me.
Tenpa. Tenpa.
Tenpa. Say
Tenpa.
Tenpa.
Chechen.
Chechen.
Tenpa.
Tenpa.
Chechen.
Chechen.
This is the form of a debate. This is the form of logic. When you're making a debate, you always say, Chechen. You take a, Chechen means take this example. Chechen means take this example. What's Dumba? Anybody saying the grace before they eat? Dumba lama saying the grace.
Sema.
Kirte.
Kirte.
Sema.
Sema.
Kirte.
Kirte.
What's Sema?
Correct
perception. Sema kyur means he turned into, and in this case it doesn't mean the perception, right? It means a totally correct person. He turned into totally correct. Sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Where does it come from? Yeah, the five qualities that Dignaga was talking about. Who's Dignaga? He's the grandfather of all Buddhist logic. Who's the father of all Buddhist logic? Dharmakirti. So this is the person that Dharmakirti was getting his logic from. Okay. He said that the teacher turned totally correct. Why? Say, Gyopa.
Gyopa.
Yimbeicha.
Yimbeicha.
Gyopa.
Gyopa.
Yimbeicha. So if you're in a debate, you say, Dumba Chuecha. Say, Dumba Chuecha.
Dumba
Chuecha.
Dumba Chuecha.
Dumba Chuecha.
Dumba Chuecha.
Dumba Chuecha.
Dumba Chuecha.
Dumba Chuecha. That's how you debate. What is Kyopa? What's Kyabdo mean?
Kyabdo.
Kyabdo is taking refuge. Kyopa means refuge, protector. Kyopa yimbeicha. Kyopa means protector. Yin means what? Is. And shir means because. So it means because he is the protector. Sound familiar? Where's the protector come from? Where's the...
Huh?
The same verse. It's from Dignaga's verse. You're getting a pattern here. He's taking one part of the verse to prove another part of the verse.
So you put the whole thing together, how would you say it in one sentence?
Take the teacher, consider the teacher. He became totally correct because he's a protector. Does that make sense? We're trying to link all those qualities to each other. And we're trying to see some kind of what? Forward progression. How one causes the next. But it seems like he's pushing it. Okay. What is it? What use is it? How can you say, oh, he's totally correct because he's a protector?
Wouldn't it be the other way around?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely wouldn't seem to be this way.
Right.
What makes somebody a protector? That's the key here. What did we say last time was the way you could prove the Buddha was correct at our stage, at our level, assuming you are who you seem to be?
The fact that he described suffering perfectly.
Yeah, the fact that he described suffering perfectly, which makes you think that he might be correct about the four
noble truths.
About the four noble truths, because that's the first one. Mm. And if he teaches people the four noble truths, what has he done for them?
He's shown them how to end their suffering.
He's protected them. That's the only way he can protect them. You know, they talk about refuge or protection, blah, blah, blah. The only way he can help you, the only way he can affect you, is to teach you the Four Noble Truths. That's the only way he can do anything for you. And they say, that's why they say the Buddha's speech is his highest activity. His mental activity and his physical activity are not considered as high as his speech. And the only way a Buddha can do anything for you is to teach you the Four Noble Truths. And that's protecting you. So now does it make sense? Take the teacher, he became totally correct, prove it. Oh, because he protects people by teaching them the Four Noble Truths. And because he teaches the First Noble Truth, we know he's totally correct. That's the key here. That's how you jump from protector to totally correct. How does he protect? He teaches the Four Noble Truths. What's the First Noble Truth? Suffering. What proves to us that he's correct? He teaches suffering. He describes the problems better than anyone. In fact, because he describes it correctly. Just accurate. Everybody got it? Okay. Want to go over it again? He's totally correct because he's a protector. And a protector teaches people the Four Noble Truths. What to give up and what to take up. And we know he's correct because he teaches the First Noble Truths. And that's all. You have to make those jumps. Protector means a person who teaches the First Noble Truth, and therefore we believe him, and therefore he must be correct.
So that's the definition of a protector, someone who teaches the First
Noble Truth. Yeah, it's the only thing anyone can do to help you. Tell you what to do with the guy at work.
Why only the First
Noble? That gets you out of suffering. That gets you out. If you react properly to the guy at work, you're out.
Why only the First Noble Truth?
Because you can't confirm the other three with your direct experience yet. You can judge him on his description of the First Noble Truth. But frankly, you're not sure about the other three. You don't know if suffering can ever end. You've never heard of a... You don't believe there's a person who's not going to die or get old. Do you? Do you really believe it? Did you ever meet such a person? No. Then do you believe Do you believe that not reacting badly to the guy at work could someday lead you to not dying and not getting old? You don't really see the connection. And do you really believe that your past perceptions created the world that you see now? It's hard to confirm. Over time, you'll see it with logic, or you'll see it with training. You'll hear it enough times, and you'll think it over, and it will seem correct to you. But right now, no. The only thing you can confirm that he said is that you are suffering in the way he described it. And his description of suffering is much more subtle than say, the Christian description of suffering or something like that. We don't say a beautiful sunset is a nice thing. We don't say a good meal is a nice thing. Because they are tied up with suffering. They always end in suffering. Suffering is part of them. Suffering is their necessary conclusion. They're not happiness. Gyopo Yimbeja. This is the first of the four reasonings of the forward order. Okay? And that's the name of your reading. This is the first of the four reasonings of the forward order. And I'll write four reasonings.
Forward order in terms of forward and reverse.
Yeah. I'll tell you what forward order means in this case, okay? It's a very good question. And I was unclear on it a long time. Rigpa means reasoning. Reasoning. This is a Rigpa, and you'll learn it. I mean, you'll get good at Rigpas by the time 5 years are done. Debating is constant Rigpas. Okay, so Rigpa means reasoning. She means form. Form. In Dharmakirti's book, the four reasonings for the forward order are to prove where the Buddha came from. Prove how you can become a Buddha. That's what forward order means in his book.
Could you repeat that?
The forward order in this case refers to where does a Buddha come from?
Because that's the specific reasoning we're dealing with.
We've only got the first one. When you get all four, you'll see it. What is reverse order in this case means, how can you prove, how can we know that such a thing exists? And we're not going to get into that tonight. That's a whole other subject. That takes a whole other year in the monastery. What we're doing in the 6 weeks takes a year in the monastery. The four reasonings of the forward order, which is where does the Buddha come from, takes about a year. The four reasonings of the reverse order, which means how do you know he exists? How can you prove it? They take another year. We're not going to do that. So we're doing Rikpashi. Okay, this is number one. This whole thing is number one. That's the first Rikpa. That's the first reasoning. What did we prove? We proved he was
totally correct.
Why? Because he's the protector in that verse. Meaning he teaches the Four Noble Truths. Meaning he teaches the first so well
that we believe you.
That he must be Tamadhyaya. He must be correct.
What did you say that Juchen means?
Take for example. I mean it's
you know, take for example. Okay.
What are we gonna argue about? How about let's take teacher. That's the teacher. What do we have to prove next? Let's move this one up to here.
That he's our protector.
Let's prove that he's a Kelpa. And then it goes like that, you see? It goes through each of those five things.
Kelpa one thing.
Say, Dubba. Take what?
He is a protector.
Got it? Take the teacher. He's a protector. Why? Chima pangbeyecha. Chima means stink. Bad smell. It's the mala in bimala. And bamba means to eliminate. It means all bad qualities. Chima in this case means a bad quality. Bangma means got rid of him. Okay. So take the Buddha. He's a protector because why?
Eliminates.
He has eliminated all undesirable qualities. Literally all stinks.
In himself,
absolutely. If it was in us, we wouldn't be here. And no one can do it for someone else. This is a secret code for one of the five words in that original verse by Dignaga. Which one do you think it refers to?
Who went to bliss?
Yeah, nice. Okay. Who went to bliss? This is referring to the who went to bliss in the verse. The one who went to bliss. That's a word for a Buddha. So we're getting each of those five parts of that very first statement that we had is coming here. He's totally correct because he's a protector. He's a protector because he went to bliss. What does went to bliss mean? Got rid of all your bad qualities and realized all things. Mainly got rid of your bad qualities here. That's what makes you a protector. If you're not that, you're not such a... You can't protect all beings. You don't have the ability.
What was the two things? He got rid of all his bad qualities and what was
and realized all things. That's what Sangye means. That's what Buddha means. Eliminated all bad qualities and realized all objects.
So why does that make you a... Why does that make him a protector?
You can't protect people until you... You don't have the ability. You have to have three things to protect people. Can't say new. And partly you have to understand their... You have to be able to see perfectly everything about them.
Where in the Tibetan do you get realized all quality, or realized all objects?
What is it?
Yeah, and yes.
It's called Dopa Punto. And we don't get it. It comes in the reverse order, so we're not going to talk about it.
Okay.
We're concentrating... What does Sangye mean? What does the word Sangye mean? Huh? It's, what does it mean? What's the Sanskrit word for Sunday? Buddha. Okay. Buddha. So you have the word Buddha. Now the Tibetans chose to use the word Sangha. What does the sang mean? What is the ge part? There's two words to that. There's two parts to that word. Sangha.
Why the excuse
me?
Why the way?
That's sorry. Close. Sang can mean to clear away something. The way that you clear away your sleep when you wake up. If you have a fresh, if you wake up, I mean, let's say after the coffee, okay? The only way it happens. That's sang. Sang means to like clear away cobwebs. It's a word that means to clear away something. And that refers to the Buddha eliminating his bad qualities. And then ge, what do you think it means? Ge means to why. And ge means he covers all objects. His knowledge, that refers to his omniscience. So generally the Buddha has two qualities. The definition of a Buddha has two qualities. He's eliminated all bad qualities and he has spread his knowledge to all objects. That's sang ge, Buddha. And this is referring to the first quality. Got rid of all his bad, all everything negative, which is what? What's the negative side of existence?
Afflictive.
Huh?
Afflictive.
Afflicted side, which means what? Two things. Two noble truths.
The everything is suffering and
suffering,
physical cause.
And what causes it. By the way, noble truth is a very, I don't know if we talked about it, but truth kind of means, you know, everything is suffering and suffering has a cause. But in the real meaning of the Four Noble Truths is everything is suffering refers to all suffering things. It's not really a truth, it's a reality. It's that thing. Most people never grasp that.
Say that again.
It's not really a truth in the sense of all men are walk on legs. It's not like that. It refers to all men. The First Noble Truth refers to all suffering things. It doesn't mean the fact that all things are suffering. The word truth in the Four Noble Truths means that very object, that very reality. It doesn't mean, oh, this is this. We are the Noble Truth of suffering. You are the Noble Truth of suffering. This wall is the Noble Truth of suffering. New York is the Noble
it's
Truth.
It's like seeing suffering.
It's the thing. It's the reality. They should have maybe translated it as the reality. It's a difficult word. The word doesn't refer to the fact that la 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 is done. It refers to that very object. You are the truth of suffering. And you are the truth of the cause of suffering. As long as you have a bad thought in your heart, you are the truth of the cause of suffering. You are both of those truths. So
why have they divided up into four? That I never got. I mean, it just seems like
two
they're
results
so
and two causes.
So connected one with the
two
next.
Two results and two causes. In fact, there's two ways of presenting it, but we'll get that to some extent. Okay, so he's gotten rid of his bad qualities, which means suffering and the cause of suffering in his heart. Therefore, he's a kyopa. Therefore, he's a protector.
Could our heart would have gotten rid of his bad qualities, but suffering.
Good point. That's a good point. That's actually true.
Sorry,
but he hasn't. I've made this simple for you. You read the Tibetan in the reading, there's an adverb here, sepa, which means totally. Mm. Totally. And in that case, bad qualities would refer to the inability to perceive all objects. And that in our heart doesn't happen. He hasn't got rid of the lousy quality that he can't see all objects in the universe. And it's a good question. And if you were in a debate round, you probably would have got somebody. Now what do we got to prove?
So, realizing and realizing all things, we're not dealing with
that. We're not dealing with that now. That's dealt with. It is part of going to bliss, but it's dealt with in the reverse order, which we're not going to get into yet. So don't worry about it.
So now we have to
what
prove
do we have to
that
prove
he removed all his bad qualities.
Now we have to move this one up to here. We have to prove that he got rid of his bad qualities.
So was that the second of the four reasons?
Yeah, that was number two of the four.
His last two Tibetan letters aren't part of it up there, right? It's to be erased.
This one?
No, well, those two in the middle there.
These?
The right? Is that part of the
yeah,
line?
It's always the same, because that's the colon.
Okay.
Because...
Oh, that's it. I thought there was one.
Say... Tumba.
Tumba.
Chuchen.
Chuchen.
Chima.
Chima.
Pante.
Pante.
Tumba.
Tumba.
Yimbeche.
Yimbeche.
I'm going to add something. Tongyiki.
Tongyiki.
Tumba Yimbeche.
Tumba Yimbeche.
Tongyiki.
Tongyiki.
Tumba Yimbeche.
Tumba Yimbeche.
So why should the Buddha be... Why should the Buddha have eliminated all his bad qualities? What caused it? Now, we've used up a lot of Dignaga's statement. We used up what so far? For reasons. We used up... What was the first reason?
Protector.
What was the first reason? Oh, because he was a protector. So we used up protector. Then what?
He's
a protector because he went to bliss. Now, actually, you're saying he went to bliss because of what? What's the only way to get to bliss?
Helps all beings.
Because of his compassion.
No, teacher. Okay. Now what doesn't make sense? I like it. Liana is very logical and she hears something that she doesn't like. You should do that. At this point you should say, well, what's that got to do with that? Okay. What you're saying is that he went to bliss or he got rid of all his bad qualities because he's a teacher. But what's really the only thing that can get rid of your bad qualities? There's, by the way, if you have a bad quality, in the Nagarjuna, in the friendly letter, the letter to the king, he spends half the book describing how to overcome your bad qualities. And he's speaking to a monk also. He's speaking to monks. And he says, he gets to a part about how to get rid of desire for ladies. And he gets into a lot of reasons. He says, first of all, when you look at a lady, try to imagine that junk coming out of all the holes in her body. You know, so out of her eyes is coming junk, out of her ears is coming wax, out of her nose is coming snot, out of her mouth is coming spit, and out of the other holes is coming worse stuff. And he says, try to think of that. And then he says, you could also, if she's your own age, try to think of her as your sister. If she's older than you, think of her as your mother. If she's younger than you, try to think of her as your daughter. And, there, and maybe you won't get desire. And then he says, but it won't really work. He says, it's only... These are like Shantideva's first 8 chapters. I mean, those are tricks that don't ultimately work. There's only one thing that really works. What's that?
Seeing emptiness.
Yeah, seeing her emptiness. Seeing the emptiness of her. It's the only thing that really works. So the rest of the book, what does he talk about?
Seeing emptiness.
Emptiness. And when we submitted that book to the publishers, they asked us to take out the first half and just... They could print the second half because emptiness is cool and morality is not so interesting. it was a very famous publisher. I won't say who. Okay. But yeah, emptiness. Okay. So because he's the teacher of what? Tongyi.
Emptiness.
Mm-hmm. That's the clue here. Again, you need a clue. It's not evident. Just because he's a teacher wouldn't prove that he got rid of all his bad qualities.
So take the teacher. The
teacher has to involve emptiness. He teaches emptiness.
But altogether, you're saying take the teacher. He went
to
bliss.
Take the teacher. He's got. He went to bliss, or he got rid of all his bad qualities because he's a teacher of emptiness. He went to bliss because he teaches emptiness. And the implication is the only way you can ever get to bliss is to perceive emptiness directly. That's the implication here.
It doesn't say because he's perceived it, it says because he teaches.
Right. But he's a Tamagyupa. He doesn't teach anything if he hasn't seen it. He doesn't say anything if he hasn't known it. That's a real important point, and I'll state it again. Temar, totally correct person means you don't say something if you don't know it. He won't say anything unless he's personally perceived it directly. In some way, with correct that he's confirmed it. He won't say anything unless he's confirmed it with his own perception. That's a lot of what Tsemar Gyalpo means, and we don't do that. And I've noticed that about myself. You know, I mean, a lot of what I say. I mean, if I talk a lot at work, I realize that a lot of it is not. And my boss is very good at saying, "Well, you sure about that?" And I'll say, "Yeah, yeah." And he'll say, "But what about that?" And I'll say, "Well, that's correct." You know. He's very good at getting it out of you in about 10 seconds that you really don't know that. That's part of Tsemar Gyalpo. So he teaches emptiness. And emptiness is how he got rid of his bad qualities. How many reasonings did we got?
Three.
finished three. Now what's the last one? You gotta prove what?
That he teaches
something.
That he teaches. That he's a teacher. Remember?
Remember.
Churchen.
Churchen.
Dongyigi.
Dongyigi.
Remember?
Remember.
Yente.
Yente.
Tukje chenmo.
Tukje chenmo.
Yuebei chen.
Yuebei chen.
Tukje chenmo. Tukje means karuna, means compassion. Tukje means compassion. Tukje chenpo means what? What's chenpo mean? Great compassion. This is mahakaruna. Okay. Very famous word. Great compassion. Mahakaruna. Tukje chenpo. Yebe chen. Yeba means what? You know? He has. He possesses. Yebeche, because he possesses. So he's a teacher because he possesses what? Great compassion. What part of that verse do you think this refers to?
Helps all
beings. Now we covered that one. Helps all beings. So how many, let's count them up. What are the four reasons that we had so far? By the way, the reasons are named by the last part. The four reasonings are named by the last part, by the thing that you give as the reason. What was the first reason we gave?
Protector.
What?
Protector.
Because he's a protector. So the first one is called the reasoning of the protector. What proved he was a protector? Huh? What was the second reasoning? Gone to bliss. Okay, gone to bliss in the sense of he wiped out all his bad qualities. Gone to bliss, don't forget, it's a word for Buddhahood. What proves he went to bliss? How do you get to bliss?
Teaches emptiness.
Yeah, you have to know emptiness. So we say teacher. What made him a teacher?
Compassion. Great compassion.
Great compassion. Which was what?
Help all beings.
So is this the forward order?
That's it, yeah.
It feels very reversed.
It does, doesn't it? I hate to admit it. By the way, these are very, very famous. I mean, people spend a whole year in the monastery studying this. They are not written down anywhere, in any of the great books. They're always referred to. The whole book is designed around the four reasonings, but they are never written down. By oral tradition, they have never been written down. I got Rinpoche to write them down. You've got them in your hand now.
Why weren't they written down?
Huh?
Why didn't they write them down?
They were waiting for
Rinpoche. But it's a great mystery. You know, I said to Rinpoche, do you know that these aren't written down anywhere? I checked in the computer. We put in thousands of pages of books. They're not in the computer. He says, you're right, they're nowhere. So he pulls out his papers. He wrote in 1961. For himself, and it has them all written out. So, see, I had the same problem, you know, 33 years ago. And he pulls out this tattered piece of paper. He says, here, you can write it down. You can copy it, you know. He says, I had the same problem. It was very interesting. Yeah.
In the first one, I'm not sure if I understand the link here, because you're saying...
Yeah, if you don't understand the link, ask me. You have to understand the link.
You're saying he's totally correct.
Weren't there five parts? How come there are only four reasons? What's the fifth part of that statement? It was on your first homework or your second homework. Check your second homework. What's the fifth part of the statement?
He turned.
Turned correct.
That was my question, is how does him being a protector prove that he's totally correct?
Good question. What, anybody know? How does saying he's protector prove that he's totally correct? We'll go in Lungdo. We'll go in reverse order. How do you know he's totally correct? Why do you have any faith at all in the Buddha? To be serious, why are you? You have a subconscious attraction to Buddhism. Everybody here, nothing logical, nothing reasonable. But what's the closest thing you have to reason? To be attracted to Buddhism.
First noble truth.
Yeah.
Your personal confirmation of suffering, and that's the first noble truth. So that's why we say. He's protector in that he shows the Four Noble Truths. If he shows the Four Noble Truths, he shows the First Noble Truth. If he shows the First Noble Truth, he must be correct. That's all. It's a good question. It's a good question. And you wouldn't know that if you hadn't had the last two classes. It builds up to this.
And then you were saying that the second part to that would be the fact that he wouldn't have shown it or spoke about it if he didn't experience it or know it.
Well, that's a little
true. Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
that's not how you prove it. That's not how you know it. Otherwise, you'd be... That's reversed. That's not good reasoning. You can't say, I believe him because he's right. Because he's always right.
No, I'm just wanting to make sure that you're saying...
You can't say, I believe him because he wouldn't have said it if he wasn't correct. I believe he's correct because he wouldn't have said it if he wasn't correct.
But he couldn't have said it if he didn't
experience
it. He
could be a liar. You don't know. He could not know what he's talking about. Not so much a liar, but just not know what he's talking about. Okay, so those are the five statements of Dignaga's statement. Why do we get into that? You don't know yet. Okay, we're building up to something. What's the course supposed to be? The proof of past and future lives. We didn't even get to it yet. You know, why are we wandering around in who created the world and these five things that Dignaga said? We don't have any connection yet to past and future lives. It will come. There's a reason. But those are the reasonings right now. Those are the four reasonings of the four. This led to that, this led to that, this led to that, and that led to that. That's pretty forward, okay? I did it backwards.
Wait a second, you're saying the forward order starts with the helpful deeds?
When you write them down, it doesn't, but you're trying to prove how he started.
So where does it start?
It starts here. Great compassion is the key to everything. Great compassion is the primal cause. We don't believe there is some God that's the primal cause. We believe that great compassion is the primal cause. We believe that great compassion starts everything.
Primal cause of what?
Of Buddhahood. Everything starts from great compassion. And we're going to explain that next.
So you're saying mechanically or functionally it starts there, but in the teaching it starts the opposite way.
Yeah, in reality it starts from there. Why? You can't have bodhicitta without great compassion. And we'll talk about that. For great compassion is not bodhicitta, by the way. It's one of the causes of bodhicitta. We'll get into that. Remember those seven causes, the six causes for bodhicitta? We had it in the first course. I still do it. Okay, have a break, and when we come back, we'll do that. And you asked me. Nobody asked me. Okay. You don't care to teach unless you have compassion. That's one reason. They say, Kenzen Nyuden, the Buddha has to have three qualities. He has to know everything. And he has to have the power to help us. But if he doesn't have love, he won't care. You could imagine a being that knew everything and had the power to teach you, but didn't feel like it.
I'm not sure if I can ask this question. Are we talking about a chain of cause?
Yeah, of course. Chain of cause is what I would call forward order. That's the forward order. And all that's hidden in Dignaga's statement. Dignaga's statement is very profound. And you study it for like 10 years in the monastery.
So
that those two lines.
Would you say that his perception of emptiness, the experience, depended on his great compassion?
Yeah. And that's a long story. That's a long story.
So it's like that comes first.
Can you perceive emptiness without great compassion? Probably not. Do Hinayana people experience great compassion? We're talking about.
Could you define Nyuden?
Can say new means power, ability, and den means has.
It seems like this would go on infinitely. Why don't we stop here? Why don't we have to prove that he has great compassion, etc., etc.?
We'll talk about it. Yeah, it seems like it could. I think that Dignaga wants to point out what's the primary cause. He got down to the primary cause now. Chandrakirti, who comes a few hundred years later, agrees, and in his book, he opens his book, which is the basic book on emptiness, by bowing down to great compassion, because that's the primal cause. That's the first cause. They call it the first cause in Buddhism. That's a fresh idea.
Why wouldn't the perception of emptiness
be the first cause? They say this one helps cause wisdom and bodhicitta. Okay, have a break. We'll talk about it when we come back.
What's up, Jay?
Tukje. Tukje means compassion.
Why did you say Tukje, but you spell it Tukje?
This is a long U.
Is this at the end there?
Uh-huh. No, but I mean, you romanize it as with a K, but you seem to hear a G when you say it.
Oh. Whether the Ga in Tibetan is a G or a K is a big battle between millions of people. It's a ridiculous battle because it's between a G and a K. You'll never decide. We don't have that in English. So I like K because to me it sounds closer to a K, but it doesn't really matter. It depends on your ear. It is not either a K or a G. Depending on which course is ahead, one is the guinea pig, and I'm still figuring out what to say while I'm doing the class. Mm-hmm. And we had it in the other course. There's actually six things, but these are the two that I'm going to talk about. Nyingje means compassion, and Japa means love. And there's lots of translations, you know, but I'll give you the basic meaning of them, and I think you'll agree that those are probably correct. The basic meaning of Nyingje, as a general word in Tibetan, compassion, means to want to get someone out of suffering, to remove someone from suffering. That's Nyingje.
In opposed to Tukje?
As opposed to Jampa.
We're
going to get to Tukje later. Okay. So what do you think Jampa is? Love. What is love? If Nyingje wants to take them out of suffering,
give them happiness.
Yeah, Jampa wants to put them into happiness. It's like a child. You know, if he's sick, you want him to get better. That's Nyingje. And Jampa is where you want give him presence.
But they're both wants, right?
Excuse me?
They're both wants. You want to...
Yeah. They're both a wish or a desire, a nice one.
What's the second one again?
Love. Jampa. Which is to give them something good, to put them into some kind of good condition. Nyingje just gets them out of trouble. Jampa wants to get them into something good. It's the difference between compassion and love. And you see loving compassion, loving kindness, mercy. It's a difficult word. To give you a sense of the Tibetan colloquial, okay, Nyingje is what you do when you see somebody in trouble. You know, you see somebody on the street, he's all dirty, and he's poor, and he's got AIDS, and you go, ah, Nyingje. Nyingje means, you know, oh, what a pity, in modern Tibetan. And Champa means, Chamgamindu means they don't get along with each other. Chamgadu means they get along with each other, they like each other. So those are the modern senses of those words. But the classical Buddhist philosophical senses wants to get them out of trouble and wants to give them something good.
What do you call this the steps of what?
These are two of the six steps for developing bodhicitta, but that's not the point tonight. I'll give you the point right now. They happen to be that.
Nyingje
Chenpo.
Nyingje Chenpo.
And Tukje Chenpo.
Tukje Chenpo.
Tukje Chenpo.
Tukje
Chenpo.
Tukje
Chenpo. Nyingje Chenpo means great compassion. What does the word compassion in Tibetan come from? What does Nying mean? Do you know? What's Sherab Nyingbo? Heart Sutra. So Nying means heart. Heart or essence. Heart. J is the J in Dorje. What's the J in Dorje mean?
Lord.
Lord of stones. It's a diamond. So J means Lord. Lord. So what's Nyingje?
Lord of great compassion.
Lord of heart. Heart. Lord heart. Highest state of your heart. It's a nice word. It's a beautiful word. Nyingje. But when we talk about the Buddha's heart, we don't use the word Nying, because Nying is a common word. When we speak about the parts of a higher person, like your Lama or the Dalai Lama, there's a whole separate language in Tibetan. You have to use a whole different, everything has a different word. This is my Lakpa, it's the Dalai Lama's Cha. This is my Go, that's the Dalai Lama's U. This is my Lu, it's the Dalai Lama's Ku. You know, you have to use these high words. So Tuk is the high word for Nyingje. Tuk is the high word for mind, or heart, holy heart, or perfected heart. It refers to a Buddha's heart.
Isn't the Tukje Chenpo the same Chinese?
Excuse me?
Is that a name for Chinese?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mahakaruna. So what do you think is the difference between these two compassions? They're both words for great compassion. This means great compassion, and this means great compassion.
bodhisattvas and the Buddhas.
Yeah, or one is a non-Buddhist and one is a Buddhist, okay? Nyingje Chenpo, big compassion, non-enlightened big compassion, is that. It's the great compassion of a person who's not a Buddha. And then Tubje Chenpo, or you should say, I should... You can have Tubje Chenpo before you're a Buddha, actually. Let's say Mahayana. Like bodhisattva, great compassion, and non-bodhisattva. Anyway, there's a difference between these two compassions. One is higher and one is lower. They're both great compassion. What makes them different? There's two viewpoints here. One is the Abhidharma, which is a lower school. It gives eight differences, and I'm not going to go into them. Okay? Because she has to leave by nine now. But I'll go into the difference in the higher school. Separate. Get... Be separated from? Chal means be separated from. Chal. Du means one. So what does jang du mean? Yeah, want to see others separated from suffering. You want to see them get out of suffering. That's called jang du. That's one kind of great compassion. And even Hinayana people can have that. They would like to see people get out of suffering.
Even?
Yeah.
Even Hinayana?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people think there's no such thing as bodhisattvas, or that bodhisattvas are not described in Hinayana literature. They are. And all the stages of compassion are described. The Abhidharma describes bodhisattvas. So Jhanda means wants to see them get out of suffering. Other beings. Gyomdu means what? What's Gyo? We had it before. Protector. Want to protect them. You want to be the one to help them. Those are the two flavors. Those are the two, like 31 flavors. Those are the two flavors of great compassion. Those are the two versions. One just wants to see, the first one just wants to see them get out of suffering. The second one says, I'll be the one to protect them. I'll be the one to get them out of suffering.
Taking personal responsibility.
Yeah, but isn't that the sixth step of bodhicitta development? And isn't compassion earlier than that?
Right.
And this is, someone in the other class guessed it right off. This form of great compassion, the kind that wants to help them, is the sixth step. It is that taking personal responsibility. And those of you who didn't study that, it doesn't mean much to you. But this kind is only had by people on the Bodhisattva tribe, Mahayana people, that actually takes personal responsibility to help those people. I don't care if nobody... Paksam, which is the personal responsibility, means... And it's a very nice attitude. It's very good for you. So I don't care if no one helps me. You know, if I think it's valuable, I'll do it myself. And I won't be affected by whether other people help me or not. If they help me, fine. If they don't help me, I'll still do it myself. If they start to help me and then poop out, I'll still do it myself, because I think it's important. And even if they attack me for it, I'll still do it, because I understand that it's important. That's laksam. And that's all tied up in that idea. Yeah.
When you talk about great compassion, I thought that great compassion meant seeing people suffering in the context of emptiness.
There's three kinds of compassion taught in by Chandrakirti, not Dharmakirti. And that's a very long story, and you'll study that. But basically, the third kind is where it sees sentient beings as empty and wants to help. It's called Migme Tsewetecha. Migme Nyingje. And it doesn't come in this book. It doesn't come in this context. He's talking about there's another book on great compassion, and it divides great compassion into three types. One is focusing on the sentient being. One is focusing on their emptiness, as an empty person. And that's a different thing. Why are we talking about great compassion?
Because that's the fourth reason.
It's the fourth reason. And remember, we said it was the original cause. Everything starts from there. You get great compassion, which turns you into a teacher. Because you're a teacher, you get rid of your bad qualities. Because you got rid of your bad qualities, you're a protector. And because you're a protector, you're totally correct. That's how we got here. Now the last thing tonight, and I can finish almost before nine. Not quite.
Go backwards.
Yeah. If I can go backwards. How long does it take to gain great compassion? Oh, by the way, in the Abhidharma, the difference between great compassion and this great compassion, the other great compassion, it's focused on all beings. It's had by a Buddha who actually has the ability to protect all beings, like that. This, in the Abhidharma, there's 8 different qualities, which I'm not going to go into. How many lives does it take to get that? Bad question. How long does it take to get it? How long does it take to get the great compassion of Buddha?
16.
You said Mahayana.
24.
Millions.
You said Mahayana.
No, millions. Yeah, you could say 3 count. You could say 30 to the 60th power. Eons.
So, and how do you get it?
Well, you meet a teacher, he explains it to you. You understand its value. You go through those steps. But anyway, according to us, it takes millions and millions of years. I mean, it has taken you millions of years to get to this class.
We have 16 lives to go, right?
No, I never said that.
I thought you took 16 lives maximum to go.
I didn't say that. There is some secret teachings about that, which are secret. And if you see emptiness directly, it's very common that you would have about 7 lives to go. And when you see emptiness directly, you will know that. You will see the 7 lives.
That doesn't guarantee that you'll go to hell again?
You can't go to hell after a certain part of the second path. It's called Jorlam Sopa. It's impossible for you to take a lower birth after a certain stage of perceiving emptiness. Intellectually, you can't go to hell anymore. Which would be a nice goal, right? Okay. So many lifetimes. Now, this is where another non-Buddhist school comes up called the Gyangpenbas, the Charvakas. Okay, Charvaka. And they say there's no such thing as past lives. They are a Hindu school that was, active during Dharmakirti's time, apparently, 5th century, say. And they said there's no such thing as past and future lives. Therefore, you can't develop compassion over many lives. Therefore, this omniscient being called Buddha that you're talking about doesn't even exist. So, Dharmakirti gets interested in what?
Proving.
He has to show them what?
Future and past lives.
That there's past and future lives. And that's how, now in the 6th class, you finally get to the subject of past and future lives. Alright? How did it go? Dharmakirti starts talking about the idea of pramana, sema, correct perception. Then he says there's one being that has only correct perception, that's a Buddha. And then he goes about showing the steps by which he becomes a person of correct perception, which is those 4 reasonings. The last reasoning involves becoming compassionate. Then he says it has to happen over many lifetimes. And then he hits the Charvakas, who say there's no such thing as future lives, and there's no such thing as past lives. And it's obvious because when the body falls down and stops, the brain stops. And there's no more mind. And obviously when the parents get together and they have this, they conceive a child, the brain must start then. Because that's when the kid starts moving. In the mommy's tummy. So life and the mind starts at conception or after that. And at death, any fool can see, the body flops around for a while and then stops breathing and the mind stops. So their big argument for proving that the mind stops and that there's no future or past lives is what? That the mind depends on the body. The mind is linked to the body. And when the body stops, the mind stops. And they say you can see it. And it's a pretty good argument. It looks like that. So then Dharmakirti has his work cut out for him. Now the reading that you didn't get tonight that you're going to get at the retreat gives you 3 reasons why three ways they think that dependence occurs. 3 ways in which they say the mind depends on the body. That's also in your homework, which you're not going to get tonight. because my printer broke. So I don't know how we do this. You don't have a class for another week and a half. So I'd like to, I'll print it tomorrow in New Jersey and I'll leave it here. You don't have a class a week from tonight.
What?
Thursday?
No,
no, it's in budget again. After the budget.
This Thursday and next Monday.
Right.
Can we write the questions down?
Next Thursday.
Yeah. I don't even have all the questions.
A week would be. A week would be.
So what time will they be here?
They'll be here as of Thursday morning. And I'm sorry, just that it broke and I went over.
Can you bring some to New Jersey?
Definitely. I'll print them in New Jersey. I'll leave some. So anybody who's going to the retreat will have it on the weekend. Anybody who's not going to the retreat could pick it up here after Thursday.
But how will somebody always be here?
No, but I could also leave some in here. And a lot of people have keys. If anybody wants a key to this place, I can give them. People are going to have keys. So those are the two choices. Or next week you can pick it up. Sorry, that's just... Just a printer die.
If it's of any use, I have a fax. Several of us do. I'll be glad to receive and send faxes forever.
Fax and Dharma.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's cool. So that's all. There's three relationships. There's three ways, they say, in which the mind depends on the body. And it's up to Dharmakirti to prove what?
It wrong.
He's got to somehow prove that the relationship is not what they think it is. That's it. It's a diary.
Sashi Bhagishashimetasham Rira Vinshinyande Yampadi Sange Shindu Mithe Uwagi Jogunanda Shingla
This is the end of Class 6.